Hello and welcome to Ditching Hourly. I'm Jonathan Stark. Today I'm joined by guest Daniel Roby. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jonathan, for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Can you tell folks a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Sure. I'm a landscape architect. I live in Loudoun County, Virginia, which is part of the county I'm in. I'm probably about an hour west of Washington, D.C., kind of on the outskirts of the suburbs there. Started my own landscape architecture company early 2017 after working for a landscape architecture design build firm for about 13 years prior. Graduated from Clemson University in 2002. Go Tigers.
Go Tigers.
A little bit of a hard Monday night, but a good night last night with a Duke win, so I'll take it. Married, three kids, busy life, running my own business with kids and everything. So I think just to take a step back too, you know, anytime I tell people that I'm a landscape architect, that's kind of a nebulous term that not many people really fully understand the scope of what I do. I mean, a lot of different landscape architects practice in various fields. I'm primarily focused on high-end residential landscape architecture. So I'll work with clients that are building new homes, often collaborating with architects, civil engineers, interior designers, doing everything from schematic design, siting the house, to designing pools, pool houses, outdoor fireplaces, outdoor kitchens, you know, complete high-end outdoor living spaces for clients. So I'm working directly with the clients. So it's a little bit different in that term. So I'm not working for another business. So a little bit different dynamic from, I think, from some of the other businesses that I think you've spoken to in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I'm glad you did that, because that was my next question, is what exactly does a landscape architect do?
Right.
But I think you summed it up well with, is it fair to paraphrase that as you design outdoor living spaces for high-end residential homes?
Correct. Yep.
Okay,
that's
great.
Exactly right. Yep.
Okay. And do you have any employees?
No, it's just myself. So I do have one part-time employee helping me do CAD drafting, another part-time employee doing some computer 3D renderings, but no direct employees here. Work out of a home office, low overhead, and keeping things really simple here in the early stages of my business.
Cool. How far afield do you go? Do you just work around your area or...
I've got jobs as far, in driving distance, probably 90 minutes away is probably the client that I have the furthest travel time to.
Okay.
So kind of in that radius around of where I am.
Do any landscape architects do things like some sort of remote consultations? It does seem kind of like one of those things that's difficult to not be in person for, but I'm wondering if you're aware of any landscape architects who...
You definitely have to travel for it. I mean, nothing remote over the computer, things like that. I mean, it is so site specific.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure there are people out there that do it, but at least for what I do, it's very site specific. Mm-hmm. Working with the homeowners, you really have to be on site and really understand the full breadth of things. So,
okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. So the communication that initiated this call is that you sent me an email with some specific questions. So what sorts of things are on your mind? Like, what kinds of problems are you faced with? Just maybe not specific questions yet, but why would you spend, an hour talking to me about your business at all? Are you trying to grow? What's your objective? Are you feeling like you're underpaid, or do you feel like you're on a hamster wheel? Are you working more than ever? And these sorts of things.
Yeah. So really it's, I always try and, listen to a lot of business podcasts or read a lot of business books just to understand that, because I came from, working in a business and never running one, and I don't have any kind of a business background. So I've really dove in head first when I started the business just to kind of learn, different ways to approach what I'm doing, because it is such a niche market. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways to do it. So I've always been looking at, smarter ways to do it, and just being a single person firm, my time and capabilities are certain limited. So I just want to maximize that efficiency as much as possible. That's where looking at, some of the practices that you're instituting really you know, caught my eye. Mm-hmm. Because I do probably at this point, I've got about 50% of my clients are hourly based. Really just because that's kind of an industry standard. If you're looking at architects, landscape architects, a lot of them bill on an hourly and, you know, operate their fees around an hourly structure. So always looking at a different way to approach things is really why I came your way.
Got it. Okay. How would you, can you even estimate off the top of your head roughly how many hours a week you work?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
Is it real like spiky?
No, it's pretty consistent, you know, throughout the year, really. It's all over the place. But I'd say probably 50 hours, something like that.
Okay.
You know, working some include... nights, a little bit on the weekends.
Right.
Nothing impossible.
Yep. Is that all client work? Are you also doing things like, you know, marketing and, I don't know, running Google AdWords or going to networking events?
So that was really the first year of my business. I was doing a lot of that. I was really starting cold. I didn't bring any clients over. Mm-hmm. I was starting from literally the ground up with zero clients. So that first year, I did a lot of business development, going out, meeting people. I wrote cold letters to architects, interior designers, anybody in the industry. Mm-hmm. I did some marketing, a lot of networking events, things like that. But that's really slowed down since I've made a lot of connections and enhanced my network a little bit. So, and I think the high-end residential model, I don't think those type of clients are after the people that are having a little ad in the back of the newspaper or things like that. It's a little bit more of a different dynamic as far as clients finding people. It's more word of mouth referrals or referrals from architects, other professionals that I'm collaborating with on a project.
Okay. Do you have much competition in the area?
You know, my competition, there are some other landscape architects with similar business models as myself, but some of them are more focused, more in the city, closer to Washington, D.C. I'm a little bit on the outskirts. Mm-hmm. So there are a few operations here and there. They're mainly, my competition are mainly the landscape, kind of your typical landscape companies that have designers in-house, that have landscape crews, construction crews, you know, all within the same company that come out, do a design and do the construction for you. But I'm really kind of after a different kind of clientele, but I do run across them sometimes. Mm-hmm.
Interesting. Taking some notes here.
Sure.
Yeah, because it's interesting that you sort of got this 90-minute radius around your location you could say trapped in, but on the other hand, it's a barrier to entry because other people from farther away aren't, you know, you're not going to get people from California in competition with you the way that, say, a software developer would. So it's probably a blessing and a curse.
Right.
Assuming there are a lot of high-end residential communities in that 90-minute radius.
There are. It's a great area. It's always a very high-income area. I think the county here has been rated, you know, in the top five, wealthiest counties in the nation. So
there you go. Okay.
In a good area for sure.
Great. Okay. So that's tons of great context. Mm-hmm. I assume your answer to the question of 50 hours per week, it's mostly client work now. You haven't really been doing biz dev since the first year.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Great. Okay. So let's get into some of the specific questions that you had.
Sure.
You can start wherever you want.
I think, you know, probably the first one I wanted to talk about was just how, you know, in terms of value pricing, how can I put a value on the stuff that I do and how can a homeowner relate to the value that I'm giving them? And I'm not, you know, it's not working with a website where if I'm building a website, they're going to get so many leads, or working with another business that there's going to be tangible results from the work that I'm giving them. You know, the work that I'm providing with these people, it's more kind of as an enhanced lifestyle. You know, the kids are going to have pool parties at their house instead of somebody else's house, or, you know, they're going to have a wedding in their backyard in this beautiful new property that we've designed. So it's hard to have a tangible value in order to base that value pricing off of, if that makes sense.
Sure. I'll point out though that even software developers have a similar problem. I mean, almost everybody, unless you are a frontline salesperson who's literally bringing money through the door from customers, almost everybody is either upstream from the bottom line or they're downstream trying to reduce churn or, you know, get more referrals or something like that. Mm-hmm. So almost nobody is like, hey, if you give me $1, I'll give you $10. You want to give me $1? Really, even salespeople can't do that unless they're working on like a commission or contingency fees. So it's very rare. So I just don't want you to feel like, you know, you're in a uniquely complicated situation for value pricing or any other kind of pricing.
Sure.
And the other thing to point out that is, I think, a significant difference is that typically software developers are selling B2B. And you are selling, and you know, some landscape architects are selling B2B, but it sounds like you're selling B2C,
right?
You know, directly to consumers. So, is that true that the homeowner is the one writing you the check, or is it sometimes okay?
Yeah, definitely the consumer, and you know, there are clients that I have that are looking at the project and thinking about resale, but the best clients that I have, they're not basing anything that we do on resale.
Right.
They're basing it on pure lifestyle decisions. You know, mm-hmm. they're at a spot in their life. This is what they want to do. Mm-hmm. They're willing to spend the money to do it right. And, you know, that's how they're basing their decisions. So that's where I think that value pricing, you know, having a premium with a great value with what I can provide could really work with the right type of client.
Absolutely. Yep. And I hasten to point out that even if you were working with a client who was thinking that this was going to contribute to their resale value, it would be pretty hard to say exactly how much it contributed to some potential sale, maybe someday in the future, with all of the other things that they may or may not do to their home. It's all the thing I'm pointing out is that it's all pretty intangible.
Right. And so, I think working with homeowners in their house, the value conversation takes on a different role. You know, some people value buying a $200,000 vehicle or a $30,000 purse. I think when it comes to your own personal things, each people value things so differently, especially with this type of client that, you know, again, that value pricing seems like a great fit.
Yes, it's a great fit. It's important to recognize that that the value is, just like you said, 100% up to them. And because you did say a second ago, you know, how do I value it? You don't value it. Mm-hmm. They value it.
Right.
You price it. There's a difference there. So in a value pricing model, just to like do a quick aside, the value pricing model, in my world, you're talking to a specific person, could be a business owner, could be a homeowner, and they are talking to you for some reason. They're interested in what they believe that you can offer them. You might not know exactly why. They might be wrong. They might, you know, they might think that you do something that you don't actually do, but they're interested in spending their time with you. So they're already investing in you. They're spending their time with you to have a sales interview.
Okay.
Some kind of preliminary interview. So they think you have something that they want. Mm-hmm. So you got to figure out what that is though. Because like I said, it could be wrong. In which case you wouldn't want to take their money and just disappoint them.
Right.
But while you're going through that conversation, I call it the why conversation, you go through these three types of why would you spend a ton of money on a landscape architect when I see that you have these landscapers, there are signs in front of your house, I know they have a designer, why don't you just get them to do it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And what you're doing is, that's just one of you know, maybe a dozen questions that you would ask them, but what you're getting them to do is you're helping them uncover probably what is a gut instinct and articulate it in words. So they're taking it from this sort of subconscious level usually into a conscious level so that they can kind of recognize it. And it is this sort of discovery process where they would say, oh, well, I mean, those guys, I mean, they're fine for like snow removal and right. you know, mowing the lawn, but this is a major life change for us. Our kids are leaving for college and we want to start, you know, now they start telling you the kind of stories that you just said,
right.
Or, you know, our daughter's going to be getting married and we want to host it here. We want it to be beautiful and so on and so forth. We want it to be perfect.
Right.
And they'll start to tell you why they care, why they would hire a landscape architect at all. you know, why not just do it yourselves? Why not take a course? There's a course at the local college in landscape architecture that you could take at nights and do it yourself. I mean, that's ridiculous probably for these people, but, but there are all sorts of alternatives. They could do nothing. That's always the first alternative. Do nothing. Do it yourself is another alternative in, you know, in general. Hire an amateur to do it is another alternative in general. Hire a professional to do it. That's, you know, that's you. That's the alternative you want. Clients, you want clients who want that alternative. And you, by going through those other alternatives, whether you do it explicitly or implicitly, they're going to explain to you why a professional, which is obviously the most expensive one financially, why that's the one that they want to do. The other why questions are about why would you want to do this now? And they might say the wedding is coming up soon, or it's summer and we want the pool in before then, or, you know, tell me some other things. Why would someone want to have you help them on, in a deadline kind of way? Like, what sorts of deadlines have you been up against?
Yeah. You know, it's always, some big party or, you know, I think most of my clients now are coming via a new house, new home project, addition or pools. Those are kind of my bread and butter type projects. So anytime they want to do a pool, they're scheduling a party, you know, a year out. So, you know, there are, and everybody's working towards that party, but, those are the primary kind of projects I'm working on and deadlines associated with that, that get very complicated, you know, as far as, you know, tying in financing or parties or however it is, there's, it can get very complicated and emotional very quickly.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. And where does your, I think I need a little more background about your actual discipline. Where do you draw the boundaries around what you do and don't do? Like, I imagine you're not moving flagstone.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, just to take a step back as far as how I work, you know, very similar to kind of how an architect would work as far as phases of design go. You know, I start with what I call schematic design, where you're working on, just referred again back to an architect, you're figuring out where the bathroom, the kitchen, the hallway, the bedrooms are, how that's all connected, the elevations of things. I'm doing the same thing outside, figuring out pool is going here, pool pavilion, outdoor kitchen, outdoor fireplace. This is how it all works out. These are the elevations. I kind of get that basic roadmap. So that's the first step of my process. And each step in the process,
I call that
schematic design.
All right. And how much schematic design? So typically how much collaboration do you have to get from the homeowner there? Are you like, what does that look? Because I've never worked with an architect or a landscape architect. So like, paint me the picture.
So, you know, again, every project has its own individual. So it's hard to, you know, say this is the typical project scope, but
yeah, party, pool party, a year away.
So as far as my process goes, I'll typically start that project, do site measurements. I'll give them design options. We'll go through a couple rounds of revisions and I'll get them a little slower.
Sure. So you meet with them.
Correct.
They agree to some price and you don't do schematic designs for free, I assume.
No. I have separate contracts for each phase of my design.
Okay. So this schematic phase, they agree to it. There's some money exchanged, whether it's hourly or otherwise. And then how much of their time is involved and how much, you know, calendar wise, generally for a typical pool party a year away, how much calendar time is it going to be before they give you the money and you give them some deliverable?
You know, probably that first stage of schematic design, it's probably about a 6-week process, maybe 8 week, depending on how complicated the project is. Sometimes longer, sometimes shorter. But again, that's really just schematic designs. We haven't looked at material selections, plants, drainage plans. I mean, layout. There's all kinds of layers that go on afterwards.
Sure. So I want to break down the phases and understand each one. So the schematic design, 6 to 8 weeks. How much of the homeowner's time is eaten up in there? Like, do you have to ask them a bunch of questions? Or do you have to have repeated meetings with them? Or is it kind of like they say, yeah, just walk around the yard whenever you need to and let us know when you're done.
Yeah. You know, normally a lot of the time is early up front, you know, just kind of, you know, figuring out exactly what they're after. And then, you know, my first, you know, I'll go through some design options where I'll say, here's option one, option two, option three. there's a lot of communication, interaction, you know, multiple meetings in that step to really fully understand. At that point, they're kind of saying, I like this piece of that design, this piece of that one, and we meld them together. And at that point, we've had a lot of the overall big picture conversations. Mm-hmm. And then making a few revisions after that is normally fairly quickly, depending on the client. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, you get this client that changes their mind, mm-hmm. you know, all the time. But that's typically, it's kind of front loaded in that early kind of exploration of exactly what they want, their family dynamic, you know, long-term plans, and, you know, showing them those options of what could be. You know, that's really the heavy engagement piece.
Okay, and what am I looking at if I'm one of your clients? You're mm-hmm. giving me like a big, like rolling out a big sheet of paper that you just drew all over with pencil, or?
Correct, yeah. So I'll start, you know, one of the things that, you know, I do a lot of hand drawings on trace paper, sketch paper, and people love that. So I'm showing them big plans with big trace paper drawings over them. You know, and they can touch and feel, and we're mm-hmm. spray painting things out in the yard to say, this is about how big the pool will be. This is where this is going. You know, it's okay. Very interactive in a collaborative process, which is, it's really fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds really fun.
Yeah. But at the end of that schematic phase, they'll have a full plan in CAD. A lot of my clients will go forward with, you know, some really 3D realistic computer renderings too that'll mm-hmm. go with it. So mm-hmm. they'll get kind of the overall layout of things, and then, you know, computer photorealistic renderings of what it's going to look like. Mm-hmm.
So those are the finals are CAD plans that, well, we'll get to the next step. The next mm-hmm. step. So how many, if you could roughly guesstimate across those 6 to 8 weeks, how many hours of your time get eaten up with the schematics? This whole phase,
probably around 40 to 60 hours, if I had to guess, somewhere around that.
Okay. For DR, and you know, maybe like what, 8 hours for the client?
Yeah, that's probably about right. Between meetings, phone calls, emails, that's probably pretty accurate.
Okay. All right, and I'm guessing they're pretty excited about all this by the time. So then the end, they get this photorealistic thing that's sort of like the dream in their head is now in front of them that they can share with other people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then they get the sort of perhaps less sexy but more useful CAD drawings.
Mm-hmm, that, correct.
Okay, now those must plug into the next phase of the process, I imagine.
Yeah, and even just to back up, you know, another piece on that first step, I'm looking at preliminary pricing just to make sure what we're designing is not going in the opposite direction of their budget. I mean, that's my worst nightmare, to get to that piece, you know, start looking at budget and they're like, well, we only had half of that budget, you know. So mm-hmm. I am asking them a lot of budgetary questions, doing some preliminary cost analysis for them, or bringing a contractor early on in the game to provide them some pricing just to make sure you're going in the right direction. Yep. So that's part of that first phase as well.
Oh, that's very good. And typically, what are they going to end up spending on the implementation or the execution or the actual, what do you call the phase when someone's actually moving flagstones around and digging a pool?
So I'm just calling that installation or construction. Installation. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so you know what their construction budget is.
Mm-hmm, correct.
By the time you're done, okay.
Yeah, and I'm going to ask them those questions right off the bat, very first meeting or very first phone call even. I'll typically schedule a phone call before I even meet with somebody just to kind of pre-qualify and make sure they're, you know, they've got realistic budgets. It's a good match for what I do and the kind of project they're after.
Yeah, it's cool too, because it's not money you'd be getting, so they probably feel pretty comfortable being honest about that.
Right.
And not... because what would be the point of wasting everyone's time paying you money to develop plans that they can't afford to build?
Right.
Okay, so for trying to keep up here with the notes, there's tons of good information. You're actually turning me on to the idea of hiring a landscape architect. So maybe thousands of listeners. So let's see, photorealistic, what do you call it? Drawing or representation or?
Renderings, computer renderings, yeah.
Rendering. And is that a physical piece of paper that you print out, or is it they can also like move around in like virtual reality on their computer or something?
There are those programs out there. I have not delved into those, but some of the architects that I collaborate on do have those programs, and they'll bring them into the office and they'll put the headset on and walk through the whole house and everything. So
right on. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you've got that phase completed.
Mm-hmm.
Do you typically price that phase individually?
Correct. Yeah, I'll typically do that individually because a lot of times I'm working on large properties and the homeowner may want to phase the project, but they want to get that master plan put together so they can efficiently develop it. So they don't say they don't build the driveway before the pool goes in the back and they destroy the driveway in the process. So, you know, they want to get the big picture and then implement it sometimes in stages. Sometimes it's all at once, depending on the project.
Okay. That makes total sense.
I'll get through that schematic phase and then we'll take a step back. We'll look at that budget and say, okay, do you want to do this in one phase, multiple phases? And then I'll enter in with what I call a construction detailing phase or construction detailing contract. And that's the second step of my process.
Okay. So one more time, construction.
I call it construction detailing. Some people call it construction documentation. It's pretty much diving into all the details of that plan that you have.
I almost said micromanaging the execution, but everything you told me about the first phase was complete news to me. So I'm sure this is going to be even more educational. Sure. So really paint the picture. Walk me through it on a timeline basis. I'm your client. I've got these photorealistic renderings. I've got the CAD drawings. I'm drooling over the dream. I'm it's right in front of me. This is going to be amazing. What's next?
So as long as we've got the preliminary budgets in place and we understand the phase that we're going to work on, then I'll develop kind of a checklist of all the things that we'll need to decide. And that goes from patio materials, patio patterns, what the pool tile is going to be, what the pool finish is going to be, what the plants are going to be, where the drains, everything soup to nuts, just like an interior designer would come into your house and say, okay, we're going to paint that wall blue. Yeah. We're going to do tile on the floor. Same thing, but just on the exterior.
That's funny. Do architects typically do that on the interior? They don't.
Some of them do. Some of them don't. Some of them have in-house interior designers. Some do not.
Okay.
Yeah.
So at this point, you've got an overall budget. I'm imagining that just by picking, we want the pool made out of solid gold versus cement,
right.
It could really blow the budget. So you must be consulting with them heavily on, here are a range of finishes that you can have on the patio. This one costs this much. This one costs that much. So obviously there are trade-offs,
Correct.
And so that must be an extremely intense and complicated. That seems very complicated.
It is. But to make things easier, I love to get, a general contractor involved at that point to help us, develop those very specific budgets early on in the game. Because I can take guesses, but there's so many different people that price things dramatically different. I mean, there can be $50,000 swing in just the pool, between different contractors. So if I can get somebody bring them in early in the game, then we can kind of develop that budget and say, here's the patio that we preliminary priced in. But if you choose travertine, it's going to be X, Y, and Z upgrade, help them make those decisions. And again, design and budget going hand in hand the whole way. Mm-hmm. So we're staying efficient.
Okay. And you've got me picturing a $50,000 swing in my pool, which sounds like fun. So what is the relationship with the general contractor? When you bring someone in to, have they already picked someone or are you picking someone? This is kind of they're kind of like your friend or partner, or is this someone?
It goes both ways. I've got a handful of preferred, companies that I like to work with. But a lot of times I'll ask to come in during the course of a new home build. And that builder who's doing the home will actually take on a lot of the exterior construction to a point, depending on their capabilities. So it goes both ways.
Okay. All right. Okay, so then you're meeting with the homeowner. It's you, the homeowner, and some kind of contractor.
Mm-hmm.
And imagining this is happening around a table, or maybe you're walking around and okay, here are the options here, here are the options there.
Mm-hmm.
You and the general contractor are basically speaking Greek, probably, and then you kind of translate it for the homeowner. Are you pulling out samples? How are they even making these decisions?
Sure. catalogs, samples, photos, all kinds of stuff. My office and my car are full of stones and pool tiles and finished samples and catalogs galore. So,
oh, yeah, sounds like fun.
Absolutely.
Okay, so how long does this kind of? I wrote down like micro budgeting. So for each individual item, you're kind of like developing a plan to a budget in a kind of circular fashion. Like, oh no, I really want this outdoor barbecue thing that's $50,000. Well, maybe we'll go with the cheaper finish on the pool or something, something, or the cheaper barbecue grill. How long, like, is this happen in one day?
No. Yeah, I mean, it's multiple months, typically. Mm-hmm. And again, it gets complicated depending on the different jurisdictions you're in. There's sometimes some very intensive permitting that's having to go on simultaneously as you doing this. Mm-hmm. There's lots of factors involved, but typically, I'll start with working on all of the hardscape selections, like the pool or the patios. You know, is that going to be a flagstone? Is that a travertine? Are the walls going to be stone or stucco? And we're looking at all these different samples and things. And I'll try and bite it off and pieces to where we don't overwhelm them, and then we'll try and then look at the pool. What's the pool finish, what's the pool color, where are the steps, where are the benches, where are the waterfalls, and kind of figuring out all those little different details and kind of taking them piece by piece to kind of develop that plan, because it constantly evolves. They go to some resort and see something, or they see some TV show or some website and they're like, well, I like this and this and this, and it's a constant collaboration and conversation throughout the whole thing. The plans are never done. I mean, that's the reality of it.
Yeah, it's done when you leave. The check is paid.
Exactly.
Right. So, I'm thinking, I am a homeowner, and I'm imagining a situation like this. Do you want this or that on the pool? Do you want stucco or travertine on the wherever that stuff goes? And I'm positive what I would say is like, I don't know. I need to see what it all looks like. Do you have to go back and update the renderings?
We can do that. As much as possible, I like to either go to another job site that has a similar material or show them photos and samples. So it's sometimes a combination of each. Mm-hmm. Again, it just depends on the individual project.
Okay.
I don't like to rely too heavily on those computer renderings because there is a degree of artistic license with those. You don't want them relying too much on those and walking around the construction guy saying, where's this white flower that you showed me right here in the computer renderings? They can really zoom in and take it to a granular level sometimes if you get too specific on those kind of things.
Yeah, that's funny. There's a direct parallel in the computer world. When you're prototyping software, you want to make sure it looks like it's not done. It's like, oh wow, it only took a week and you're done. It's like, no, that's a picture.
Same thing.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me a little bit more about this pulling permits thing. Is that your responsibility?
So typically I'll introduce them, say they need a site grading plan where they've got to, prove to the county that they're not going to flood the neighbors or pour a whole bunch of silt onto the driveway or the street in front. So there are certain things. I'll bring in a civil engineer, whoever that professional is, that's going to do that and have them work directly with the client. And I'm kind of coordinating those efforts.
Okay. Okay. What else goes into construction detailing?
When you're talking about other professionals like civil engineers, sometimes I have to bring a structural engineer if there's any kind of structures present, so we'll have to bring them in to help material selections, just general confirmation of the plan and layout. It's really just every single little detail that a contractor would need to price the project and to build the project.
So that's the deliverable at the end. And what does that look like? Are we talking about a 40-page document with it's like a binder with like a mood boards and so on and so forth?
Yeah, so typically at the end of that process they'll have a multi-sheet set, so imagine a 24x36 sheet, and you'll have sometimes it's 10 sheets, sometimes it's 20, with all the specifics written down. It says this patio is going to be this material, this pattern, this joint color, and I'll have details that'll say exactly how the contractor should install it. So it's multiple pages going over all those separate things, you know, lighting plans, planting plans, you know, all the specs and details throughout.
Okay. And is it one master document, or do you have like a version for each different, you know, like the lighting people might be different from the, you know, if somebody's got to put an I-beam in somewhere, or the pool mm-hmm. people might be different from the patio people, or I don't know.
Right.
Is it all split out? Are you?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So each sheet, you know, you'll have one sheet that's a lighting plan that'll have designations for the lights and the specs for each light, where the transformers are, how they're zoned. And then you'll have the next sheet that's for the pool guy that says, this is how I want the steps. This is the material finish. This is the tile. So, you know, so they can look through that construction set and say, oh, this is my page, or this is my page, or refer mm-hmm. to page 2 and 3 for my work.
Okay. So the deliverable are, just like you said, detailed construction plans.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this entire phase, you said, can you kind of give us a bit of a time box if we're imagining the year out pool party model?
Yeah, that might be a 2-month process. It could be 3 months, you know, again, depending on the size of the project. Mm-hmm. It really, that can span a lot of different time frames there.
All right. Can you detect up front how long stuff, like, you know, like, do you get a sense from someone after going through the schematic design phase if a homeowner is going to be high maintenance or low maintenance?
Sure.
So, yeah, I think they're all high maintenance, but like yeah, insane.
But there are certain levels, you know, you can certainly get a really good feel. That's why I like to do those separate contracts, because you learn a whole lot in that first phase of design, not only about the client, but about the project and how the next phase is going to go. So that mm-hmm. way I kind of have another chance to price it differently than that last right. job, or, you know, right. it again, very project specific, but absolutely. There's a lot of indicators there.
Okay. And you said that, but generally you said it'd be around 3 or 4 months, I think.
Yeah, typically. And sometimes things are happening simultaneously with that. You know, there may be a piece of the project that's getting built while you're still figuring out some of the specific details.
Sure.
So,
okay. And the client involvement sounds intense when you need them, but is it intense throughout? Do you have to have a weekly meeting with the homeowner, or is it less than that?
It's probably less than that. But it does get intense, and I try not to overwhelm them. And that's why I, you know, try and lay out, you know, that checklist of all the stuff that we've got to go through, so they understand this is what we've got in front of us, but let's take it off on bite-sized pieces and help them understand it. They're sometimes overwhelmed at the beginning, but as you kind of work through it, they start to, you know, really get a comfort level.
Okay. So maybe, you know, what is that? 12 weeks for 16 weeks. So maybe 20 hours of homeowner time, 20, 30.
Yeah. Possibly something like that.
And for you, is this like, how many of these could you handle at the same time?
You know, that's a good question that I'm trying to figure out right now. I've got, you know, I think when you're into that construction detailing phase, a lot of the heavy design work that, again, takes most of my time is done. You know, when I'm into the construction document phase, at least my individual time, it's my meetings. And then I can pass on this information to my CAD drafters to say, this is what we decided, put this into the plan. Because we've already got, you know, the basic skeleton of the plan in the computer. I can kind of hand off information and let them run with it as far as those technical documents go.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so your personal time, I mean, is this like 20 hours a week for the whole 3 months?
No. It's maybe 3 or 4 hours, I'd say, at the most.
Okay, so there's 36. So let's call it, that's less than I expected. Mm. 3 or 4 hours per week for this phase times, let's say, 10 weeks, so 30 to 40 hours maybe. Okay. And you're paying a little bit for the CAD person, but
mm-hmm.
Okay. Quick question to loop back.
Mm-hmm.
Does it ever happen that someone does the schematic design phase and just wants that?
Yes. So I've got some clients that have their own, you know, they have estates and they have their own in-house crews. They've got mm-hmm. people that do nothing but work on that property that they employ. So and a lot of these people have a lot of time on their hands. Sometimes they're retired and they're taking on the management and the construction of the project. Mm-hmm. So sometimes all they need is kind of a, you know, a professional opinion and a roadmap, and you're more those type of projects. It's more of kind of like a consultant, you know, more than a real, you know, formal landscape architect. So
got it.
Again, it ranges. I think those are the type of clients that it would be very hard to do a value-based fee on, in my mind. And maybe you've got strategies, you know, yeah, tell me otherwise.
But. Right. I don't necessarily agree with that. Okay. Not necessarily, but
sure.
I mean, the reason why I'm going into such depth here, I wouldn't normally have to do this with a developer because I already know what mm-hmm. they think because I was one for 20 years. Mm-hmm. This is perfect kind of information. Okay. So the construction detailing phase, you end up with these really specific pages of instructions and schematics and specs and, you know, details for people to go execute. So it's like the blueprint.
Correct.
Okay. Roadmap / vision. This is like the blueprint. I'm mapping this stuff to things from my world. Okay. So now the construction detailing phase, or what I would call the blueprint, is done.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever be like, okay, have fun, see ya?
Yeah.
Or is it, yeah, typically there's another phase, I would imagine.
Yeah, so again, if I have my druthers, I would definitely go into this next phase. My last phase is what I call project administration, which is a mm-hmm. fancy word for saying I can be around during construction to help act as your advocate in communication with the contractor, checking on construction.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe that's weekly meetings. But again, some clients, they don't need that. But I try and stay involved as much as I can because things constantly change. Any type of construction project, it's not a static environment. Stuff is always moving and changing. Clients change their mind. So even after those plans are done, there's almost always some revisions that you'll have to go back and work through, or some unexpected things.
Sure.
Or they add on to the project. So I like to stay involved in that last step. And typically that last step is really, at least how I'm working now, is just an hourly basis. And it's kind of an as-needed basis. You know, when, you know, call me if we need to meet with the contractor, or if some clients that we do try and schedule periodic meetings just kind of throughout the course of the project.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And you call it project administration. I call this project oversight.
Okay.
And we have the exact same thing in the software world. When there's a big project on the table, there's actually, this maps very similarly with a high-level software project mm-hmm. in a lot of ways, because
okay.
it does start off with like prototyping the vision,
mm-hmm.
which is your schematic design phase, and then creating a blueprint, which for me would be more like an architecture diagram and, you know, all of the, maybe an entity relationship diagram, which I'm only saying for the benefit of the listener.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the next phase, I would say project oversight, because you don't build it. So like usually with a software developer, they'll do the vision thing and they'll do the blueprint thing in order to get the build.
Right.
And they'll make all their money on the build.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually the build is a very high revenue thing. And the numbers you shared with these projects go into the millions of dollars for the build.
Mm-hmm.
But mm-hmm. you're not making the millions of dollars,
right?
Because it's just brain work, air quotes.
Right.
So the problem with the trap, just to have a quick sidebar here, mm-hmm. the trap with giving away or pricing the vision and the blueprint pieces or your schematic design and construction detailing, the problem with pricing those low or hourly is that they don't take that long,
mm-hmm.
but they're really important.
Right.
And then if you're imagining that, well, yeah, I'll do those things at my hourly rate to get the build, which you don't do, but,
right.
but for software developers, they're thinking like, oh yeah, I'll do the prototyping and all of the brainstorming and all of that stuff. And then I'll lay out the whole architecture and define the stack top to bottom and all of these things before, you know, maybe even hire some, you know, or find them some subcontractors and then, or maybe even train their staff a little bit like, okay, here, this is how a web project works. And then they go in and they're like, okay, we're going to make all of our revenue on this build because it's going to take a year.
Mm-hmm.
And it could easily be $500,000. And the problem with that is that it's really hard to do the build. And
mm-hmm.
it's very expensive for the builder to do the build. So the profits that you're getting from that particular phase are pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just lots of them. It's pretty low profit, but it's for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And software developers have a tendency to forget that their time is a cost, and and just think it's all profit. Like, oh, well, man, I made $500,000 on this project. It's like, well, no, you didn't. You worked 80 hours a week for a year.
Right.
You know, if you hired someone to do that piece for you, there would be no profit left over for you as the business owner. You basically have a job that you made for yourself, a job with no boss, but you, your business made no profit. You are dodging that bullet because you don't install pools.
Right. Right.
And there's another aspect to this, which is that there are tons of material costs, which don't, they're minor material costs in software, but they're negligible. So it makes it interesting because the budgets are super high, but there is probably a part of some of the buyer's brain that, and you've kind of trained them on this a little bit. I don't suppose you have a choice, but you've been like, this finish is more expensive than that one because it is, you know. For whatever reason, and that feels really tangible, and so they're spending a ton of money on a lot of stuff that feels really tangible. So spending, you know, a small but significant fraction of that on a piece of paper and a picture on their computer probably feels pretty intangible in comparison,
right?
To like 40 tons of gravel.
Right. In my previous job, it was a design build company, which just sounds like kind of the business model that you were talking about before. Yeah. So, you know, they've got in-house design staff and in-house construction crews. The design piece is just a mean to the ends. They'll very, you know, minimize the value of that design in order to get that big budget build project.
It's a loss leader.
Yeah. So it's, you know, when I started this, it was a completely different way of thinking. But, you know, a lot of architects will charge a percentage of the construction as their fee. I've got, you know, some soapbox issues that I don't
think
like
that's a mistake.
Yeah. And I think a lot of clients have issues with that too.
It makes no sense.
Right.
It makes no sense whatsoever.
I mean, yeah.
It's just time. It's just easy. It's like hourly is easy. It's like, oh, well, here's something we can measure. Let's measure that.
Right.
How many hours or how many dollars you're going to spend and then take a percentage of that. Like, where's the justification for that?
Right.
It doesn't make any sense. It's the same with the ad spend in advertising space. It's like, oh, well, the agency will just take a percentage of the ad buy. Like, why?
Yeah.
It doesn't map to anything.
It's sometimes a conflict of interest, too. You know, the client will think, well, why did you design that to be such a fancy, expensive thing? It's just because you're going to get more of a percentage off the project, you know? So there is sometimes a conflict in the design piece, too, because the client always has that in the back of their mind.
Yes. Okay. So okay, well, we didn't really talk about the project admin. So let's, this one seems easy to picture, but you tell me, like, what's it, I imagine, you know, a guy with a hard hat and blueprints walking around a job site, just sort of checking finishes and making sure, you know, like, oh, you know, don't paint it like that. Paint it a little like this.
Right.
And like, these lights are in the wrong place.
Exactly. Or answering phone calls from clients that says, you know, what do you think about X, Y, and Z with what the construction crew is doing? And typically I'm pretty involved with the construction, with the general contractors as far as scheduling and when they're doing work. And, you know, that way I can check in on things. But yeah, it runs the gambit between, you know, going out and laying out plants or picking out materials with the contractor, you know, verifying things on site that it's the right pattern or the right color, or, you know, there's a million different things, but it's really just being there for support for the client and making sure everyone's vision is, you know, completed the way we've all been talking about for months and months and months prior.
Yep. The vision is realized. And now imagine if you weren't involved, it would be mom out there yelling at everybody, right, not recognizing that, yeah, it'll be fine. We're just not to that part yet.
Right.
So I would imagine that having you around is a beneficial to the contractors as well, like people that are actually building.
It is. And a lot of times they'll confide in me and say, hey, you know, the contractor's doing something that we don't think is correct. You know, is that correct? And if it's not, they'll sometimes lean on me to have that conversation with the contractor that says, hey, this is not the way you should be doing it. You should be doing it this way. So I'm really kind of out, you know, kind of as a safeguard between the client and the contractor, kind of as a mediator. And sometimes in those situations.
Yeah. Is it common that it gets very, like, you know, marriage counselor-y? Like, does it get into like, does it commonly become emotional, or do you act as a release valve so that doesn't usually get to that phase?
Yeah, I used to always call it a roller coaster. You know, it a lot of times when it starts, you know, everybody was on a high. Everybody's super excited. And then, you know, it's inevitable that every construction project is going to come across some hurdles. You know, then it kind of it dips down and people get upset. And, you know, it's a constant roller coaster of emotions because you're in these people's homes or you're working on their future home. I mean, it's a very personal thing that you're involved with there.
Yeah.
So it does get that way sometimes, but I do my best not to to steer them away from, you know, a bad contractor or a bad decision to, you know, alleviate some of that emotion.
Yep. Okay. So same question with the others.
Mm-hmm.
How much, I mean, I imagine the homeowner really is, they're just along for the ride at this point, perhaps calling you, maybe, you know, confiding in you, these sorts of things, but not a real big time commitment. They're not burning a lot of cycles on creative energy and making decisions. It's just like, you know, Daniel, I think they might have messed up the pool.
Correct.
You know, stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah. Could you come by and, you know, just make sure? And so it's not a big time commitment on their part.
Mm-hmm.
I know this is impossible, but on average, what does it feel like your commitment level is here time wise?
Yeah, that's a hard one. Again, it's very project specific.
What's a worst case scenario? Let's say, like, worst week. A bad week. Like, what's the, like, ugh, I was there like every day for 2 hours.
Yeah, maybe 4 or 6 hours a week is worst week. But I think that's, you know, that kind of dovetails into another question. You know, that piece, you know, I know you've talked about pricing levels, and I think that piece is a very easy one for me to understand, a pricing level that says, you know, lowest price is needed, as needed, as necessary, or a next level is I'm on site once a week, and a next level is, you know, I'm there twice a week, weekly meetings. You know, I think that's an easy one for me to look at that range of pricing and really to have a value pinned to each level.
Yes, that's very interesting that's the direction you went. I think you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's some challenges there, and there's another way to do it that I think is a little simpler for the homeowner to get their heads around from a purchase decision standpoint. All right, so before I get into that, though, this is the last phase, I imagine?
Correct, yep.
All right. Is there any, in your process, do you have like aftercare? Do you send photographers to this site to put in your portfolio, things like that, or ask for referrals, any follow-up?
Yeah, I'll typically check in with them. You know, and you know, again, it being such a personal experience working in their homes, being in their homes, you know, you have a pretty good relationship with them to where you try and check in and touch base with them. How's the wedding, or, you know, how's your Christmas, things like that. So I am constantly checking in just to, because it's a relationship. By the end of that project, you know each other really well. They know about my family, I know about their family, and so, you know, on a good project, you're kind of gaining a friend at the end of the project. So it's very personable. You know, you hope they call you for the next project.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And but that's nothing you charge. That's just courtesy stuff.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now let's swing back around and start talking about prices.
Mm-hmm.
How many leads would you say you get on a monthly basis? Not closed deals, but just like, you know, like, oh, maybe we heard that you do good stuff. We're thinking about something. Maybe we should talk.
I'm probably getting on average probably about 3 a month.
Okay. And how many of those do you convert into customers?
I think last year it was over 50%. It was maybe closer to 60.
Okay, 50-60% conversion. I am going to guess that those are all referrals.
Correct. Yeah, I think of all the leads I had last year, I think, you know, there was like 2% were coming off of, you know, the internet, you know, random marketing, things like that.
Okay. And are the referrals from, if you had to, you know, draw a pie chart, what percentage are coming from past clients? Which ones are past clients doing new work? Mm-hmm. Which ones are referrals from past clients? And which ones are referrals from your partners that you sort of all work together with?
I'd probably say it's at least 50% referrals at this point from other professionals, whether that's a civil engineer, architect. I get a lot of leads from architects, interior designers, engineers. I'm getting a lot of leads that way. Mm-hmm. And then I think the other two categories are probably split more in favor of repeat clients. Mm-hmm. But, you know, very minor. So maybe it's 25% repeat clients, 25% new clients as referral from old clients, and then 50% from, you know, referral from other professionals.
Okay. And the repeat clients, are the jobs typically smaller, bigger, same?
Typically it starts with a big project. And then, you know, there's smaller projects after that, but it could be the absolute reverse. I've got some clients that I've worked on their residences and they own a company and own the office building and they want some, you know, a small project at their office building.
Okay.
So sometimes it dovetails into projects like that.
Got it. Okay. So when a lead comes in, mm-hmm. and what do you say? Let's jump on a call, or do you meet with them? Like, walk me through the process.
Yeah, typically I want to have a call to speak with them more about the project, make sure they understand my process, because again, a lot of people's stereotype of what a landscape architect does. When you say, "Hey, I'm a landscape architect," they think you're a landscaper that comes out and,
yeah,
you know, digs ditches and plants a tree in your yard. But, mm-hmm. you know, I just want to make sure they understand exactly what I do and it's a good match. Mm-hmm. And I'll discuss right off the bat, you know, kind of how I charge, what a typical hourly fee is, what a typical fixed fee is for their type of project. Mm-hmm. And if everything's good at that point, I'll schedule a meeting on the job site to talk with them further about everything.
Okay, so pretend I'm a client, and mm-hmm. and it sounds like I've got a pool party in a year.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, you don't have enough time, but that's another thing.
That's an aggressive timeline.
Exactly.
Fair enough. You have to hire me, or you're definitely not gonna. You probably won't make it if you do hire me, and you definitely won't if you don't.
Right.
Okay, so you're gonna have a pool party in a big mud hole.
Right.
So what? What's your spiel? Like, hit me with your spiel.
So, you know, I really just kind of go through the exact steps of what I talked to a little.
But what do you
bit
say?
More of like a simplified way.
Yeah, like, what's the rate? Like, is it different for different phases? Are you already talking to me about how many phases I think I want?
Exactly. You know, I'm saying, is this a single phase project? Do you guys want to have this all done all at the same time? You know, what's involved in the project? Have you been speaking with other people? And if I'm getting the referral from an architect, I know right off the bat, they're used to my fee structure. They're used to how I work phase wise, sequencing wise, because they work in a very similar manner that I do. That's really kind of why I set up the structure that I have, just because if anybody's working with an architect, it's going to try and dovetail right into kind of how I work. Mm-hmm. So again, it depends on where that client came from, the kind of questions that I'm asking them.
Okay.
If it's a cold lead that just some other homeowner passed on to another homeowner, I'll dig a little bit deeper into budgets and making sure they're comfortable with my fee structure. Mm-hmm. You know, just, I want to be very upfront and honest. And I just want to say, just want to make sure we're a good match for each other. And I don't want to waste each other's time. You know, just, I think you have to be honest right up front, or you're going to end up wasting a lot of time, especially in my industry, with people just kicking tires and,
yeah,
you know, trying to get free estimates and things like that. So,
right.
You know?
Yeah. You might as well present yourself as the most expensive option immediately.
Right.
And filter out anybody, because if you could cut your number of clients in half and double your income anyway, theoretically.
Right.
So why, if you just filter down to the ones that are going to value what you do most highly.
Correct.
So there's really no reason to, you're way past this line, but mm-hmm. once you're good enough to do a great job, like you're an expert, you're a professional, mm-hmm. and you're an expert at what you do, it's all about, you know, and you want to grow your business without adding headcount, it's all about getting better customers. Like, that's it. That's your growth channel. Your growth channel is getting better customers. And better means ones that value what you do more, ones that have the budget to spend. And that allows you to be more profitable, which means you can do a better job for them, which means they're going to refer you more and hire you again more.
Mm-hmm.
And you've increased your profits dramatically.
Correct.
So now what, I have no idea, even ballpark, what an hourly rate is for a landscape architect. So what would you, and maybe I'm a potential client and I say that to you.
Sure.
I'm like, I feel like we really need this. This is important. It's going to be my daughter's wedding. I want it to be right, but I honestly don't know at all how much this costs. I have no idea. I don't know if it's $1,000 or $100,000.
Right, right.
So what, can you give me an idea?
Sure. So my hourly rate, just to be completely transparent right now, is $180. Mm-hmm. My
just like a software developer. It's my, like exactly the same.
My CAD assistant is build them out at $130. Mm-hmm. And really kind of operate that way. But again, if I can get a fixed, and maybe this will dovetail into your help here, if I can get a fixed fee proposal right off the bat, then I'll talk those numbers, you know, for a schematic design of a, you know, kind of your standard, you know, 1 acre lot, you know, it's a nice lot, or 3 acre lot, you know, it's probably in the $8,000 to $12,000 range for that schematic design process. And I'll throw that out right off the bat and see mm-hmm. if they have any qualms with that.
Mm-hmm. What if you just said it's 15,000?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's something I've been debating back and forth, you know, give them a range, or I think that's probably where I'm the kind problem of my with the, personality yeah. is, you know,
the problem with the range is it doesn't, it will maybe disqualify them, but really as it doesn't do a better job disqualifying them than a fixed price, like a single mm-hmm. price, mm-hmm. because if you say, what did you say? 8,000 to 12,000.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
All they're hearing is like, they might not have an explicit number in their head. So if I said to you, you know, how much would it be worth for a software application? Mm-hmm. How much would you, you know, how much would you pay for a software application, or how much would you pay for a private coaching program with me? You'd be like, I don't know. But if right. I said, would you pay $50,000 for private coaching with me? You'd immediately have a reaction that's yes or no.
Sure.
So I think throwing the number out is a very quick way to qualify people, but also uncover what it might be, what is certainly not exactly what it's worth to them, but a number that is lower or higher than what it's worth to them. So if you say it's $15,000 for the schematic, and once we have that, you'll end up with a, you know, it'll take about eight hours of your time across the course of 6 to 8 weeks. I'll need you for about 8 hours spread out over that. And at the end, you'll have CAD drawings, you'll have photorealistic rendering of the idea that's in your head will be on paper. You'll be able mm-hmm. to put it on your computer. And if you want, you can even come and put a virtual reality headset on and walk through it.
Right.
And that's just what it is.
Sure.
And immediately, people who didn't blink at your 8,000 to 12,000 are just going to say yes.
Right.
So
that's okay. A good thought. Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
You could say 12. You could just stay in the high end of your current range. Because sure. if you say 8,000 to 12,000 and they immediately say yes, they would have said yes to 15.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, might as well just fixed price yeah. that.
Right.
Anchor and if somebody high, right? says yeah. no, right? Yeah. If somebody says no, then okay. So other questions the two questions that they're going to want to know is how long is this going to take calendar wise? Like when am I going to get my you know, like when am I going to be excited and get this picture that I can play with?
Right.
So they're going to want to know that. They're going to mm-hmm. want to know how much time it's going to take from them, and they're going to want to know how much it costs, and maybe a little bit about like do we need to let you in the house? Can you know stuff like that?
Sure, sure. Logistics, but right?
Real basic stuff. There mm-hmm. and what are they going to get out of it? You're going to get the picture that's in your head.
Mm-hmm.
out into the world so that you can share it with other people and start to get prices, start to come up with a plan, pick finishes. But that's all next phase. That's when we do a construction blueprint. If you want to move forward with me, I can do that with you as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's $65,000 or whatever.
Right.
Multiply it out. But, you know, the maximum end of your range, which
sure.
you said it's about 40 hours times 200 is, what is that? Times 100 is... 1, 2, 4, it's only 4,000. Yeah. So maybe I threw out maybe way too high of a number. Maybe the blueprint phase is, you know, what's the, that can't be right. Am I doing the math right? For it's like $8,000.
Yeah. Almost eight. Yeah.
So the schematic is, yeah, so the blueprint phase where I, you know, map out everything, say it's 12.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you're making a nice profit there. It'll probably take, you know, it'll probably take us 3 to 4 months. You'll end up with the, specific documentation down to the number of tiles and how much everything's going to cost and all the decisions that we make. The problem with this phase, dear homeowner, is that it takes a lot of your time and it can be really intense.
Right.
So can you commit to me that you would have, you know, 20 or 30 hours spread out over the course of 3 months to actually go over this stuff, walk the site, be going through samples, maybe come to the store with us, meeting with, you know, you bring in your general contractor on site, make them commit to the time commitment and let, you know, think about the money less.
Mm-hmm.
And say, okay, and then you'd end up with these, you end up with this deliverable.
Right.
Say, oh yeah, we can do that. This is important. I say, okay, great. And then I would fix price both of those first two things. And to account for the potential swing of scope, I would just price it way on the high end.
Yeah. And I try and do fixed prices for both of those whenever I can. I think the problem comes up on these jobs where they come to me, they're very wishy-washy about the scope, like I was mentioning before, they've got a large estate with multiple, you know, homes and outbuildings and, you know, a lot of different pieces, or a winery where they're developing things all over the place. And
that's
hard.
A whole different can of worms. Yeah.
So,
and you would know that immediately on the very first phone call. So I would just have a product for them too.
Okay.
So if you had an estate, you know, maybe you've got a house schematic or, you know, there's probably terms for these that you already use, but if you, or maybe you could do it by acres, but I don't love that.
Right.
That's a weird thing to measure, but you could say, if it's basically a residential project, a winery is not a residential project.
Yeah. It kind of crosses the line. A lot of at least around here, a lot of the wineries are residences that they've developed a piece of it as a winery. So it kind of, it crosses boundaries a little bit. That's why it's a good fit for me, because it is kind of just a giant high-end residence. So,
okay. So what I would try to do is come up with a version of the schematic I see that you can kind of make a case for that being, you're like, oh, they live there, but it's still a business. So that's more of a B2B sale, I feel like, which should have a different price. It's a totally different mindset, I would think. I mean, I've never dealt with someone like this, but I would think that you just have, like, you'd say, oh, well, is this part of a business or is it your home? Well, it's kind of both. We live there, but it's a winery and we have tours and there are, you know, workers there all the time. And I mean, it's going to have all kinds of different constraints. You know, I mean, if there's a retail aspect to it and you're doing construction there, there's going to be a whole different can of worms.
Mm-hmm.
I would be a little bit surprised if you disagreed that wasn't a fundamentally different project.
Yeah, it definitely is from the whole process. It definitely is. Yeah.
So you could determine that very quickly on a phone call and say, oh, okay, well, I do this residential schematic design that, you know, you wouldn't even need to say this to them because they don't qualify for it. But in your head, it's like, well, they don't qualify for the residential schematic, so I'm not even going to, you know, maybe you could mention, oh, I do these residential schematics for $15,000, but this, I wouldn't actually mention that. But in your head, you're like, these guys are not garden variety residential. This is mixed use. This mixed use schematic that is 25,000 or whatever is the very high end of your range for that, for based on your experience. And they can say yes or no. And maybe your conversion rate will go down, but maybe it won't. But maybe your conversion rate will go down. And if it does, you'll end up with less work for the same amount of money.
Right.
Or more.
You know? And I've had clients kind of in a similar type of property where I've started hourly and I've said, let's think through this scope a little bit from an hourly perspective. And once we get that really nailed down, we'll transition to a fixed fee approach. And, you know, a lot of people like the fixed fee approach rather than hourly just off the start, no matter who they are.
Yeah.
And so they're pretty reliable and agreeable to kind of go forward with that approach. Does that make sense?
Everything. It's very difficult to name anything you buy where you don't know the price when you're making the decision.
Right.
Very difficult. And construction is almost the only thing. You could say healthcare, but that's weird because insurance. But almost everything you buy every single day, all day long, there's the thing, there's the price, you make a decision. Mm-hmm. With software development, with legal services, with all this hourly billing stuff, the seller is asking the buyer to make a purchase decision without ever telling them the price, which is really uncomfortable for the buyer.
Right.
And your people are already going to be in that uncomfortable situation because they're about to do this with their builder and they probably hate it.
Sure.
You know? It's like, you just give fixed price. It's not an hourly. And it's like, well, have you ever worked with a builder before? They say, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, did it ever go over budget? And you're like, yeah. You're like, well, that will never happen with me. Well, right. How many hours is it going to take you to do this schematic? I don't know. That's why I don't want to charge you based on the hours.
Right. And do you feel that gives a homeowner heartburn by, yes, they know the price, or homeowner who or any client that they know the price, but they don't necessarily know what they're getting?
You can
which is different on the back end.
I feel like you will. Okay, that's a great question. I'm glad you asked that. So you are not necessarily selling them the value that they are using to determine whether or not your schematic is worth $15,000. Mm-hmm. Is not how beautiful their wedding is going to be in the backyard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that. It's the difference between hiring a professional to do this first phase or not.
Right.
You barely even have any competition in your area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like you even have to worry about somebody undercutting you.
Right.
It's more like, do you want a professional to do this for you or not? It's fine if you don't. I completely understand. But if you hire a professional, it's going to be expensive.
Right.
And to that, you know, to these people, $15,000 is probably not even that expensive.
Right. Exactly. And that it's not that expensive, but it's just the stereotype of the landscaper. I'm paying the landscaper how much to do a plan? You know, some of that I'm fighting from an educational right. perspective. That's it's neither here nor there, but that's sometimes some of the battles I'm approaching.
No, that's important. That's the why conversation we already talked about. It's like, why don't you just have your landscaper do this?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What does he charge per hour? $30?
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's going to be a lot more to have me do it. In my opinion, it'll be better, but that's up to you to decide, not me.
Sure.
And they might say, well, could I see some other ones that you've done? Could I talk to some other clients? And you're going to show them some beautiful renderings, and they're going to talk to some happy clients, and they'll be like, phew. They'll talk to their landscaper, who'll be like, I don't know, I guess we could do it.
Yeah.
And they're going to be like, that 15 doesn't sound so bad.
And I've had it's happened once, not all the time, but I have had another competitor who's very well established, has a larger firm, came in at a schematic design price lower than me,
mm-hmm.
but the second phase they were charging percentage. And the client first off the bat, they saw that number, that hard number that says, look, they're cheaper. And they didn't understand the second phase, that percentage. So that's a little bit, not a concern, but something I have to just factor in that.
That's just a point of differentiation.
Yeah.
So you say, well, you know, are you talking to anybody else? Yeah, we're talking to this competitor. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, make sure you consider are you planning on using a landscape architect for all three phases of the project? Oh, three phases? What are the three phases?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's this first phase, and then there's the phase where we break out all the costs, and then there's the final phase where, you know, I oversee the project. If you want, I can oversee mm-hmm. the project to make sure that everything's going in according to the vision that you had. Mm-hmm. And they'd be like, oh, okay. And so, you know, and you could say, well, my first phase for the vision phase is 15 for residential, which is what you are. And for the blueprint phase, it's 12. The competitor that you're talking about, and you might prefer this, they're going to price it based on your overall construction budget. Mm-hmm. And you said your construction budget is $3 million, so that's going to be probably $300,000.
Right.
So
exactly.
So you know, you can decide which you think is more fair.
Sure. How about you know, again, I collaborate with a lot of architects, interior designers that bring me to the table who have a similar pricing structure. They don't price like what we were just talking about, but they'll price sometimes hourly, mm-hmm. or they'll give them a number and it's an hourly not to exceed number.
Oh, it's the worst possible choice.
And do you see any issues with them having a pricing model, bringing in somebody? And I've kind of worked the structure around kind of how an architect works, so it's easier, less heartburn on the homeowner trying to learn a new system of how this guy's getting billed. Do you see any potential pushback, or would that be, again, a differentiating factor kind of as a plus in my
book? I mean, you're bringing in a system that's different from architects, but it's the same as virtually everything else they buy. So it's not going to be hard for them to understand it. It's like, would you drive a car off the lot without knowing how much you paid?
True.
No, it's how they buy everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wouldn't worry about it at all. And I would give the architects my name.
I was just going to say, I'm going to point them your direction.
Right. Get them to switch.
Exactly. Imagine,
now, one potential problem is that the architects think they know your price and say, oh, you should call Daniel. He's $15,000 for this.
Right.
Maybe you don't want that. You might not want them to do that. So You can solve that in a couple of ways. One would be to change your price regularly.
Mm-hmm.
You could, every time you sell one of these, raise it $5,000,
right,
or $2,000, whatever is reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
So the architects never know exactly how much it is. They could say, well, last time we used them, it was $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I don't know what his prices are now. Because you don't want them kind of undercutting you, or you don't want the homeowner to, I guess it would be fine if the homeowner was like, oh, that's way too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't call you because then it would be too expensive.
Right.
So it might actually be a net positive. And for software developers, I tell them to put their prices right on their website. But you don't need that because no one's really going to your website,
right,
at least as an initial part of your sales funnel there. It's all referrals.
Sure.
So, I mean, if you were afraid that it might negatively impact your referrals, you could just talk to some of the ones that you're closer to and say, hey, I'm just going to move over to fixed price. This hourly thing is for the birds.
Mm-hmm.
Is that, would that affect your ability to recommend me to people, or would you feel better about it?
Right. Right.
I mean, they might feel like it reflects negatively on them.
Sure. Sure. Now, if they come back, or if the homeowner comes back and says, how do you figure your pricing? How do you answer that question?
I would just say, based on past experience for projects like this.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how long it's going to take.
That's much better than how much time it's going to take me. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know how long it's going to take. So it's not really fair to not give you a price and get started.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd really rather just give you a price and I take the risk. If it ends up taking me longer than I thought, then that's my problem, not yours.
That's great.
And for you, to calm you down, if you're nervous about like getting killed by some complete like scope creep, yeah, revision monster.
Mm-hmm.
Most of you probably have enough experience to detect that kind of a person up front and not work with them. Or you could just, the other way to look at it is, it's not, you know, it's not going to happen that often. So if one person takes twice as long as you expected, the rest mm-hmm. of them are going to make up for it.
Right.
So
right.
It's really not something to worry about.
And I try and be as specific as possible within the proposal that says, these are the deliverables. These are how many revisions you get. Anything beyond that is above and beyond this price. And
I would just raise my price to whatever the most above and beyond you ever got.
Okay.
And that's your new price.
Okay.
And you just say, and if that's 15,000, which I'm guessing is roughly in the ballpark,
mm-hmm.
and you just like, it's 15,000 unlimited right. revisions.
Right.
You know, at some yeah. point they're going to want to declare victory because they've got the pool party coming.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Yeah. So Memorial Day is coming
point,
up. Yep.
Yeah. So at some point they have to say, okay, I'm satisfied. And yeah, I think
sure.
this is a very clear productized service. This is clearly perfect for that.
Good.
So you just pick a price, go for it. I think the blueprint phase or the construction detailing phase is similar because it's actually less work for you. It's mm-hmm. to me, it sounds like more work. So, and the client's going to feel like it's more work for you because they're more involved.
Right.
So it's going to seem like way more work.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think I'm almost nervous about pricing the construction detailing lower than the schematic.
Yeah, typically, historically, if I just go back and I do track hours just as a way of just, you know, kind of forecasting things. You know, if you go back, time and money are pretty similar from the schematic to the construction. You know, mm-hmm. those details typically.
Okay.
Again, mm-hmm. each client's a little bit different.
I feel like, and your competitor is probably charging $300,000 for the construction
yeah.
part.
So I don't know how they do it. Yeah.
There's something psychologically, I feel like it should be more, like it's 15 for this, but mm-hmm. maybe not. That might not be fair. I don't really know your industry.
I mean
acceptable.
I take it as you could almost reverse engineer their pricing fee to help the homeowner understand value that says, look, I'm charging you this, which is X percentage of how much your project costs. This other company would charge you Y, and help them understand, you know, mm-hmm. you're getting a real value for what you're getting here. It's expensive, but yeah, but this is,
I don't try to persuade anybody.
Okay.
That feels a little bit too close to persuasion.
Okay.
I would just rather be willing to walk away at any point. Almost like not disinterested. You always want to be polite, and you know, I can tell just from talking to you that you have the right demeanor for this.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as it starts to veer into that, like, no, look, I'm actually a better deal than the other guy. No, don't do that.
Got it.
Stay away from that. Just be
sure.
like, hey, if you want to go with the other guy, he's good. I
right.
know him. you can absolutely trust him. And if you feel you'd be more comfortable with him, please go with him.
Sure.
I wouldn't for a second be like, no, 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 I'm better than that guy, or I'm cheaper than that guy, or you're going to end up spending less with me, or the way that I price my stuff's more fair. Never.
Got it.
I would make sure that they were aware of the differences. I would say something like, well, make sure, you know, are you planning on doing all three phases? Make sure you ask how he's going to price out all three phases. Because mm-hmm. I can give you a price right now for all three phases.
Mm-hmm.
And or another thing is, if you're bidding against someone who you think is working on an hourly basis, and because this happens a lot in software, I don't think it'll happen a lot with you. But if somebody comes to you and says, well, I got an estimate from somebody who's like less than half of what you charge, I would say, well, that's great. You should go back to them and ask them if they'll stand behind that price. And if they do, you should probably go with them.
Uh-huh.
Because they won't.
Right.
They won't
just be confident in your process. And,
yeah, exactly. You know. Just be totally confident. You've got leads coming in. You're doing okay. You're not like desperate for money. It's fine. So mm-hmm. like you can be super confident. You're going to deliver a great product, and you've got you like decades of experience doing it. It sounds like you honestly enjoy it.
I do. It's a great job. Yeah. Right.
I wish I lived in Virginia. Yeah. It sounds like fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so now the last phase. So these two, the vision and the blueprint, or the, sorry, I keep using my terms, the schematic design and the construction detailing, I would definitely fix price both of those on the high end of where your worst case scenario has ever been in the past, and then every time you sell one, raise the price.
Okay.
Project administration thing, what I would call oversight.
Mm-hmm.
I would probably do that on, because what they're buying there, 100% what they're buying there is insurance.
It's right.
Pure insurance. And I would price that on a monthly basis for the length of the duration of the project, because you don't have control over how long the project's going to take the builder to execute.
Correct.
You'd say, hey, it's I'm happy to, you know, and this is where you had like tiers of service, which you could do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know enough to have a strong opinion whether that's the right way to go, or to just go max the needle at the high end and be like, it's $3,000 a month for me to kind of keep tabs on the project, be a shoulder to cry on for you. Not that I would say it like that, but
right.
And as a go-between to make sure that, you know, when they put the pool in, they put the pool in the right place. We don't want to move the pool later.
Right.
You know,
right. Okay.
And you
that's
could
a good
say,
approach.
It's like, I trust these guys. You went with the people I trust. I know they're going to do a good job. But I also know that they don't speak homeowner very well, or you don't speak construction very well. And I know that homeowners sometimes get freaked out when they see things coming together in a patchwork fashion. They're like, wait, did he forget to do the barbecue, the plumbing or the gas line for the barbecue?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if you feel like you're going to be worried about that and you want me to kind of act on your behalf and whatever this means for you personally, scope wise, I don't know. You know, maybe it means walking the site weekly or daily or regular right. meetings or whatever it looks like.
Right.
Whatever you want to commit to for whatever monthly price you want. Again, I would just make this a fixed price thing, but on a monthly recurring basis where they just set up a credit card. You just put the credit card in, it charges it 3, 5, 10, whatever it is, 1,000 per month. And you do what you said you were going to do. And they'll, you know, pick up the phone when they call, and they'll be happy. You'll be happy, and the project will be a success.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
So you don't really need to have value pricing conversations with anybody, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Just right off the bat, don't even.
You can save the value pricing conversations for the vineyard types.
Right. Got it. Yeah. Right.
Be like, I don't really do this. I mean, I do this, but I don't really have a product for you. So we could talk about having a custom proposal, in which case, you know, you get this whole can of worms with the scope creep and multiple projects.
Yeah.
And the answer for the multiple projects is I would insist that you only do one at a time.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to map it out as phases, that's fine. But I'm not pricing phase 10 when we haven't even done phase one yet. So.
Right. That makes sense. Okay. That's great. I mean,
the other thing you could do with the vineyard types is offer this, you could offer this oversight thing, where maybe they've got a crew, or maybe they've got, maybe they've already got a schematic from somebody else, and you look at the schematic, you're like, this is good. You look at the construction detailing that they got from someone else and it's good.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, I mean, if you want a hotline to my brain, you want me to come by monthly to watch the weekly to watch, to check on this construction and make sure everything's to code or to plan. It's $5,000 a month. You can use a credit card. It'll just automatically recur. And when you are done with me, you're done with me.
Right.
No contract.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's a great approach, you know, because I think those kind of clients are probably not my bread and butter. And
maybe you just say no.
Filtering, well, I mean, even filtering them out with that kind of a conversation is a, you know, kind of pre-qualifying them there early is a good idea. Mm. Right. Yeah, that's great. That's great advice all around.
Cool. Fabulous. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like we've made some good progress.
Absolutely.
Hopefully other people will benefit from this. I think there's a surprising number of parallels between this and software development. So I think it would be pretty useful to most folks.
Great. Great. Well, it's definitely valuable advice, and look forward to trying out some of these things here in the near future.
Yeah. Let me know how it goes.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right, folks, that's it for this time around. I'm Jonathan Stark, and you have been listening to Ditching Hourly. See you next time. Hey, Jonathan here again. Do you have questions about how to improve your business? Things like value pricing your work instead of billing for your time, or positioning yourself as the go-to person in your space, or maybe productizing your services so you never have to have another awkward sales call or spend hours writing another custom proposal. Book a one-on-one coaching call with me and get answers to these questions and others in the time it takes you to get ready for work in the morning. Best of all, you're covered by my 100% satisfaction guarantee. If at the end of the call you don't feel like it was worth it, just say the word and I'll refund your purchase in full. To book your one-on-one coaching call, go to jonathanstark.com/call, C-A-L-L. That URL again is jonathanstark.com/call.